Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Medical Writing Institute Spring 2015 Regulatory Documentation Classes. This is part one, and like just about everyone in the Northern United States at the moment, I have a cold, so my voice sounds a little odd. And every now and then I have to stop and cough. Apart from that, if you can get over that, I want you to have fun. This is a course in four parts leading towards a certificate in regulatory documentation. It's four parts, but that doesn't mean it's easy. It can be taken over 4 weeks, or it can be taken over no weeks. If you have a background in science and you know a whole lot about antibiotics, including all their drugs, what they do, why you need them, all about antibiotic resistance, and if you know all about regulatory documentation, you've worked as a medical writer in the regulatory documentation field for some years, you can have an exam right away. You don't have to take the classes to you. I hope you do because it's fun. I've put a lot of things for you to read, things for you to watch, things for you to listen to, and lots of writing. Now, I was once employed by a medical advertising agency where we wrote slideshows and ghost wrote medical journal articles for all kinds of people. And I can remember one of my colleagues there telling me that writing regulatory documents was like watching paint dry. Some people have that attitude. Personally, I find regulatory documentation extremely interesting because I started off my career as a medical writer when I was about six reading telephone books, and I love lists, I love order, and that's really what regulatory documents are all about. There is an order that has to be followed. With the individual documents and with all the documents, if you're putting together a pile of documents that are 2,000 pages, 20,000 pages, they better all look the same. Because when you're flipping through, you need to find the same thing on the same part of the page every time. Apart from the fact that order is beautiful, it looks nice. Now, for the people who don't really think regulatory documentation is like watching paint dry, but think it's not far off, I've decided to try and make it a little interesting this time. So what we're doing is we're following antibiotics. And we want to follow the pathway of antibiotics. Now, anyone who's cruised into any of the four websites I've published or seen the books I've published know that I have a very great, deep personal interest in the continent of Africa. And in fact, this whole exercise with MJOTA, Medical Journal of Therapeutics Africa, started with Africa, because we wanted to put together a journal for medical writers where medical writers could showcase their work. And because we didn't want anyone to sue us, we wanted to have a journal that no one else was doing. And so we came up with this title, myself and a whole lot of students, and we've been publishing MJOTA since January 2007. So, well, the story really starts for me in 1944 when a young Irish physician moved from Sheffield to London. And she caught the eye of a young English physician. And they got engaged and married in 1945, and I was born some years later. Now, why, say, the story starts in 1944 was because when my parents were training as physicians, there were a whole lot of diseases that people died from, that people don't die from now. My mother started her medical career when she graduated from Queen's University in Belfast Medical School in 1940, January 1940, and she moved to Sheffield. Now, Sheffield is a big steel producer in the north of England, and it was a tempting target to German bombers, and they did bomb Sheffield. So when you're bombed and you're injured, what do you do? How do you stop infection when you don't have antibiotics? Well, a lot of people died. They had other ways, too. One way of cleaning a wound that doesn't involve an antibiotic is having a saline solution. And certainly in traditional medicine, there have been healers in villages, and the healing techniques and the plants have been passed down. And there have been ways to heal people. But in 1944 was really the year when antibiotics started to be used. And they were first used in hospitals in London, where my mother was. And my mother was one of the first physicians working with antibiotics in London. Now, that didn't mean she was the only person that knew about antibiotics. I mean, having access to these incredibly powerful drugs, everyone knew about it. Anyone with any background in science or medicine knew about it. And I remember a delightful conversation with a zoologist in 1983 who had liberated one of the camps that the Nazis had built to murder people on a mass scale. And he managed to get hold of some of this antibiotic, and he saved, I can't even remember who it was he saved, but he one dose, and it was just like this person went from half dead to running around. Antibiotics were very, very powerful at the beginning. And my mother never gave me an antibiotic. She just had far too much respect for it. And she was always talking about antibiotic resistance and how they weren't as strong as they were, and she needed to not give me antibiotics so that if I ever really needed it, it would work. And the only time I was given antibiotics was when I was 6 months pregnant with my son, who's now 34, and I had pneumonia. How about that? So my mother was right. But that's really the history of antibiotics. It's only been around for 70 years. They have only been around for 70 years. And a lot of the antibiotics just don't work the way they should. In some people, none of the antibiotics work at all. Meanwhile, however, other antibiotics are being found, and maybe they have a different drug structure. Maybe they have an entirely different way of interacting with bacteria. And that's really why I wanted to look at regulatory documents from the antibiotics point of view, because I think antibiotics are extremely important. And if you're going to have a certificate in medical writing and regulatory documentation, I don't want to just show that you can spit out some documents. I also want you to show that you have a very great understanding of a therapeutic area and a drug. If you would like to be part of this course, you can certainly listen to the podcasts. That's not a problem. But if you'd like to enroll in it, in the class, formally, you'll have to send me an email, drdodgson@medicalwritinginstitute.us, or even easier, publisher@mjota.org, publisher@mjota.org, and go on to make sure you have an account on Facebook, and go on to the Medical Writing Institute page, like that page, Medical Writing Institute page, and leave me a message there. We have a secret group on Facebook that no one can find because it's secret, and only people who are enrolled in the class can access it or can even find it. And in that class, I've got links to documents, videos on the mjota.org site, mjota.org site, and the other three websites that I publish. As I said, we've been publishing mjota.org since 2007, and I've never removed anything. So there's a lot of documents there, and there's a lot of things that are very interesting. Now, initially, I have put up two pages on mjota.org on antibiotics. One of them you can access just from the outside. The other one you'll need the password that I'll give you. And this is just to give you a very thorough grounding in antibiotics, just to understand what they are. I mean, it's very, very simple. You have bacteria, which are a little tiny life form, and they jump onto a person one way or another, or maybe they're in the person already and something happens and they're activated. And they cause an infection. And what you have to do is you don't want to kill the person, but you want to kill the infection. So a drug will be aimed at the bacteria rather than at the person. Like, for example, if you have diabetes, there's no bacteria, there's no virus. You actually have to aim the drug at the person. So an organ, organs are target. Now, because you have a different target for antibiotics than for other drugs, you have a different set of documents. But I am getting ahead of myself. What are we doing? What we're doing is we are finding a new antibiotic. That's what we're doing in this class. And I'm taking you on a walk next to Lake Embezi, which is in somewhere in the continent of Africa. I believe I've made it up. I may not have. But anyway, the Lake Embezi that I am envisaging is somewhere around DRC Congo, because my heart is at the moment in DRC Congo, a beautiful country with a lot of trouble. Very lush tropical. So there we are. I'm staying in a village because I'm hunting for antibiotics. And I'm walking along the lake and suddenly I fall over. Trip. I gash my leg. And as I'm falling down, I'm grabbing hold of this beautiful flower and I grab it in my hand and reflexly I rub it on my scratch. I go back to where I am staying and I don't have a scratch. I don't have anything. It's all gone. It's all fixed. Now, this, of course, is more like magic than the way physiology and drugs work, but you get the idea. Somehow or other, by huge serendipity, I've come across a bush that has healing powers. And then I talk to people where I'm staying, and they're saying, well, yeah, of course, that's what you do when you have a, you know, you break your arm, you scratch, you know, you start breathing funny, you know, they rub it on you, or you breathe it in. This being of two minds, here I am, American, British, Australian scientist who wants to heal the world of bacterial infections. And I know that antibiotics are becoming less and less effective. And I see this and I think, my gosh, I can take this back to the United States. I can give that to a drug company. I'm an American, British, Australian. And that's what we do. We do go to other countries and we steal things that we didn't know existed before. And because we didn't know they existed before, that means we can get a patent. So I go to the U.S. patent office and I can get a patent for this antibiotic after having done a little bit of testing. Or I can do the decent thing and say, wait a minute, this doesn't belong to me. This belongs to these people who've had this wonderful healing medicine for 100 years, 1,000 years. So this is an ethical dilemma, and I would... One thing I would like is I would be very interested in someone writing an article on this ethical dilemma, because this is a very real dilemma, and this has been a problem. I mean, what can you patent? Why can you patent amino acids? Anyway, for one reason or another, I have decided to go get a patent and put the villagers on as the patent holders, because it's their drug. So any money that comes through from developing this drug and marketing it into little pills, it will spill back to the villagers. Okay, so I've done one decent thing. Or is that the decent thing? You tell me. But all I have at that stage anyway, I mean, I have all these beautiful dreams and, you know, I'm looking at gold gushing out of fountains. But all I have at that stage is a plant. So I have to, when you give an antibiotic to someone, you can either give it to them as orally, taken in the mouth, as a pill or a tablet or caplet or whatever you like to call it, whatever it is, whatever form, or you'd inject it. So it either goes through the digestive system or it goes straight into the blood system. Or it can also, of course, be put on topically, just rubbed on the skin, or it can also go into the muscle. So, I mean, there are quite a few different ways you can deliver drugs. But however you do it, it has to be approved by the Food and Drug Administration as safe and effective. And so that's what the journey is. So we're going to stop with our journey just at the moment, and we'll continue with that on later days. So all we have at the moment is just this plant. And we need to go through all the steps to get from the plant. What I would like you to do first is, as I said, go to the mjona.org page and go to antibiotics and watch those videos. Go to the Facebook page. So you go to Medical Writing Institute. You say like, and I will, and you communicate with me. And I will put you into the which web page to go to see things and to interact and to read. Because we're going to go through all the federal agencies that are involved in regulating drugs. And they're pretty terrific. You know, any time anyone says anything nasty about the Food and Drug Administration and the CDC, I just laugh at them. They don't know what they're talking about. The CDC collects data. It's the best data collector in the world. When the Ebola crisis broke out, who did they call? They called the CDC. Here you've got the richest people in the world, Bill Gates, Paul Allen, I think, and probably more. Who did they give money to fight the Ebola crisis, which appears to be nearly over? They gave money to the CDC. And these people know a little bit about where they're going to put their money. They put their money at the very, very best place, which was the Centers for Disease Control. Now, why would they put it at the Centers for Disease Control? The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, are in Atlanta. And what they do is they collect health data. And they've been, I remember how long they've been doing this. Is it 100 years, something like that? Probably longer. I know it was set up originally because malaria was a huge problem in the United States. But, well, that's another story. We did get rid of malaria. But the CDC collects morbidity, mortality. So anyone who dies and the cause of death, it has to go. It goes to the CDC. Anyone's sick in hospital with certain diseases, like any infectious diseases, the CDC is told that. The CDC picked up AIDS because suddenly there was too many people dying of Kosy's sarcoma. Like three men died of Kosy's sarcoma in like 1 week. And Kosy's sarcoma was so rare. I mean, that just didn't make sense. It was just... that was impossible that three people could get it at once. So the CDC started thinking there must be something going on. And very rapidly, within weeks, they had identified a new disease, which turned out to be AIDS, HIV/AIDS. So the CDC knows what's going on with antibiotic resistance, and they've written about it. They produce a newsletter every week called Morbidity and Mortality. I told you, I've been reading telephone books since I was 5 or 6. You know, love the tables. So they produce tables, but they also produce written reports about the data, which is superb. CDC was certainly the go-to place for the Ebola crisis. They updated it every week. Now, the second place I want you to go for this first part, to the drsusanna.org page, website. Drsusanna.org is also mjodatalks.org. If you type in either, it'll go to the same place. And you go down the left column of, and I'm going there right now, so I can, you go in the left green column of the website, all the way down to pharmaceutical industry training. It's right below MJOTA Talks music, and it's right above MJOTA Talks Religion. Huh, isn't that interesting? So you click on pharmaceutical industry training, and there's a website, and there's a video that was made of me in 2007, so it's 8 years ago. But you go below that and write down, and the background is Basel, which is a huge center of the pharmaceutical industry. Novartis is there. And you can see two sections. One's called Pharmaceutical Industry Management Certificate, and the other one is called Regulatory Documentation Certificate. Now, the class I'm talking about at the moment is Regulatory Documentation Certificate. And if you click on the first, on week one, and use the password I will give you, you can access a whole lot of videos and documents and information. Now, you can see on the left, I have pharmaceutical industry management certificate. Now, these classes are for people who think that regulatory writing is like watching paint dry. Or it's also for people who have a problem with trying to figure out what they're going to do. One thing I found is that be a medical writer and they're not suited. To be a medical writer, you have to have a pretty good understanding of science or how to find things or health or medicine. Or you have to be an ace journalist. Journalists seem to be able to figure out anything, really good journalists. I'm in awe of good journalists. Another problem is a lot of people do not have English as their first language. And a lot of medical writing is talking on the phone. You have to talk to interview. I mean, I was blessed with a British-sounding accent, so I sound a lot more intelligent than I am. But I found that people who don't have British accents have accents from African countries or Caribbean countries or European countries. They find it a lot more difficult to get jobs, which of course is ridiculous. I mean, a lot of people whose first language is not English speak and write far better than anyone who started spurting English. I don't know where that prejudice comes from, but it really does. So what I'm suggesting is, I have built some partnerships, is that if someone has a problem with English grammar or writing, I have a teacher that you can go to who's, we're a cooperative. She's not working for me, but she has her own business, and you can go to her and she can help you with English grammar. I'm also in the process of developing a partnership with a speech therapist who can help the little bit of help they need to sound a little less foreign or overcome a speech impediment. So these are two things that I'm finding that are standing in the way of getting jobs of people who are completely qualified. The other thing, too, is that medical writing is not the only job in the pharmaceutical industry. And in this certificate, in this set of courses, we go through other possible jobs that people can be getting and can be applying for. And I will apply for these jobs with you. So that's really what that is. And there's a lot of other things medical writers can write, apart from regulatory documents. They can write monographs, they can write novels, they can write fiction. They can work with writers who need some kind of medical background for whatever they're writing. In fact, I really suggest that. If someone is writing a fiction novel about murder and there's, you know, blood involved, I really suggest these people get a consultant who is a medical doctor. Or if there's a science element to it, like you're landing on the moon or something, hire a scientist to go through the work as well. You know, we're all in this together. We can't do everything ourselves. And so I hope you have fun. If you are interested in the pharmaceutical industry management certificate, I'll start that in a couple of weeks. We'll see how the regulatory documentation certificate goes. And I hope you have fun. There's no charge up at the front, but the only time you'll be charged is when you do the exam. So if you do the exam, there is a cost. I said initially I was going to charge $260 for the course, But I'm not. I'm going to charge $260 for the exam. So if you're ready to do the exam, I will, if you can, yeah, that's that. Now, I tell you, the downside of me not charging you for the course is if you don't do the homework, I kick you out right away. You know, if you're not taking this seriously, I will be very upset because I take this very, 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 very seriously. And, you know, we're not playing games. We're talking about people's lives here. When you're talking about medical information and you're writing about medical information and health information for people, they listen to it. They pay attention. Look at this nonsense that's going on with this anti-vaxxers. It's absolutely appalling. This is what happens when half-baked information is around and people interpret it however they want to. This is very, very important. In fact, I firmly believe that no one should be permitted to write health or medical information without a certificate as a medical writer. That's how strongly I feel about this. So there we are. Anyway, I welcome you to the class, those who are going to take the class. If you come across this recording after we've already started, that's not a problem. I can get you started in the right place. After a while, I just get tired, but I can keep on enrolling people until I get exhausted, and we'll get ready for the exam, which is at the end of the course. And the exam will be, as I said before, it's going to be a combination of oral, so I talk to you, ask you questions directly, and it will also be and written. So by the end of the class, the objectives are that you understand antibiotics through and through, and that you understand the regulatory documentation process. And, you know, have fun. This is supposed to, you're supposed to enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, you don't belong in regulatory documentation. It's supposed to be fun. You're supposed to find it stimulating. And you need to find it interesting. But you also have to realize too that it's very, very important, and people's lives depend on accuracy in medical writing and the documents we produce. This is Dr. Susanna Dodgson. I am the publisher of mjota.org and drsusanna.org and EmeraldPattyMelonPress.com and PeaceScientists.org. And chat with you soon.